The whole time?
Yeah, usually.
That's good.
I try.
So we're on Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're about to start the Mishnah. Yeah. So the Meiri gives a little introduction and overview of this Mishnah. He says, our Mishnah wants to know if something requires a tzibur, like for example tefillah b'tzibur, and you have a shliach tzibur, or kriyas haTorah requires a tzibur, is there anyone in particular who has rights, so to speak, to be appointed as the shliach tzibur or the kori b'Torah? And the Mishnah tells something very surprising. It says hamaftir b'novi, whoever gets the maftir, then he gets all the kibudim. It's like a package deal. Who pores al shma, and pores al shma means that he in case there was a group of people that didn't hear, you know, Kaddish and Baruch Hu, so they appoint someone. Oh, good morning, Asher. How are you? So they appoint someone to stand and be motzi the tzibur, and who over lifnei teva, he gets to be the shliach tzibur, who knows his kapov. Oh, we have to see what that's about. But if he's a kohen, he gets the duchen. So all this is because he's a maftir b'novi. Now there's something very strange going on in this Mishnah, because even before we get to the logical question about why the maftir b'novi, just because he gets to recite the haftar b'novi, therefore he gets to be the shliach tzibur, etc. I mean, that's a logical question that we have to address. But even before we get to that, there's like a technical question here. I guess you'd call it, in terms of the logistics of it, it makes no sense, because you're telling me that because he's the maftir b'novi, he's going to be the one who reads the Torah, or he's going to be the one who's the shliach tzibur. Now, how do we know when we get to a point? You know, shliach tzibur comes right before the maftir b'novi, and the koreis haTorah comes before the maftir b'novi. So what happened over here exactly? You following me? This is a sequential problem over here. You can't tell me that because he's the maftir novi, we're going to give him something that already passed. You know, something that came previously.
Poor Sashma, you said again, was he says he's it's like shachrit. He's not even shachrit.
Well, not exactly. It means like following. Let's say, for example, there's a minyan for shachrit. Now, a whole bunch of people, we don't know exactly how many. That's going to be a gigantic controversy. But a whole bunch of people missed davening the tzibur. So they showed up. Let's say they davened already b'yachidus, but they want to gain baruchu and they want to get kedusha. So that's called poris al shema. The reason for the phrase poris al shema, which literally means to divide kriyat shema, is because what they did is after baruchu, they continued, and whoever was in charge of being the reader, so to speak, the shliach tzibur, he would read out loud the first bracha of kriyat shema.
Okay,
we had about a week ago, we had a discussion why the first bracha of Kriyat Shema. So that's one bracha out of two, so they call it Poreis, which means to split.
Okay.
So in any event, Rashi seems to be bothered by this problem. If you take a look at Rashi, Amaftir b'Novi, Rashi says, Misha Rogil Lahaftir b'Novi. Apparently there was, back in the day, I don't think it's the same custom today, but there was a person who was in charge, so to speak. He took it upon himself to be the maftir b'novi. So on a regular basis, he would get the haftorah. So taktiknu chachamim, on his behalf, they made a takana, shehei poris es hashma, v'hu over lifnei ateva lahotzi es hatzibur b'kedusha shebetfila, and he would get these honors. So the question is, okay, fine, Rashi solved one problem, which is very good. We now have a solution to the technical, what I call the logistic problem. How could it be that we're already appointing him as the shliach tzibur before we even got to being maftir b'novi? But Rashi answers that he's rogil.
He's a...
In Yiddish we say upstandig, meaning he's already, you know, he's the set maftir guy. You know, he reads the haftorahs. That's his job, so to speak. So because he took upon himself that job, we give him a kind of, you know, in the Hebrew, in the Israelis call it a chupar, you know, I think it's an Arabic word. We give him a chupar, we let him get the other honors. You know, He could be the Parisal Shema in one situation, he could be the Bashatz. Again, there's going to be a discussion here what it means that he's going to be the Kohen that gets the Duchen. We don't know exactly what that means, because if he's a Kohen, let him Duchen. If he's not a Kohen, then right. He can't become a Kohen. So I don't know exactly what the Mishnah. So that is a whole.
This is a limitation on a
whole paragraph
on the board to say Birkat Kohanim.
So anyway, that's what he says here in the footnote. Yeah. He says, "Afil shaftor mucheres," even though the haftor is later on, it's after Kriyas HaTorah, it's after being a shliach tzibur, which came much before. But nevertheless, since he's rugil, since he usually gets the haftorah, we give him these other kibudim. Again, we don't know why yet. We're going to try to figure that out soon. But then in the footnote here, he quotes another possibility of how to interpret the Mishnah, even without Rogil. And he says the following, that it means that we know he's going to take the Haftorah. Let's say we've already approached him. It doesn't mean that he's Rogil. Every Shabbos he gets the Haftorah. But on this particular occasion, we gave him, you know, when I was a kid, they used to give out these little silver things, you know.
Right.
With the kibbutzim on it.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
still do. So now they're
plastic.
Yeah, my day they was cool. They were expensive. It was
a big anyway,
together. Yeah, so they, apparently they gave him out, the maftir. They already told him up front that he had maftir. And once he agreed to take the maftir,
it's a package deal.
Then it's a package deal, exactly. He gets to be the shliach tzibur as well. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara is going to try to explain exactly why. That's going to be the Gemara of my time. If you'll see, like, that yeah. seven lines mm-hmm. up from the bottom of the mm-hmm. page. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, in terms of this business about duchenin, you know, what does it mean that he's ol l'duchen, noses kapav? I mean, for sure he's noses kapav, he's a Kohen. So what's this all about? So I'll read to you the language here. He summarizes many, many achronim. Hikshu achronim. My rabusa b'meshenosi es kapav. Rekol ha-kohenim nosim es kapayim. So what is... If he's not a Kohen, he's not going to duchen. If he's a Kohen, he'll duchen together with the other Kohenim. So one approach is to say that really there is no chiddush in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is just in the reisha, a contrast to the Sefer. And the Sefer is going to be a discussion about a katan, whether a katan is noses kapov or he's not noses kapov, when a katan could be noses kapov, and so forth and so on. So this is what you call Idi the Katani, Sefer Katani Reisha. There's no real chiddush. But then he gives another answer, and he says that apparently there was a kavel back in the day that the Gadol Shebehem, I guess whoever they wanted to give the honor to, he would begin the Birchas Kohen. You know, today I think we have what's called the Hazmona, you know, with somebody else out, Kohanim. Yeah. But the impression I get here is that in those days, they gave the cover to the Gadol. He would be the one who was honored to start, you know, to, as we say in football terms, to kick it off, right? To kick off the Bracha.
Oh, so this is the Rav or the Gadol in the Beit Knesset?
He's saying the Gadol of the Kohen. You know, it's amongst the Kohen. One particular Kohen would get that honor of starting it all off.
Okay,
but in this case, that he's already the Maftir, which again, I don't know if it means they already told him he's going to be Maftir, or he's Rogil to be Maftir, so he gets to start the Bracha. Then he gives another explanation. He says, what happens, this is actually a sugya masech de sota, if the entire assembly, the entire tzibur, is made up just purely of Kohanim. So what they would do is, they would set up one Kohen, and the other nine Kohanim would answer Amen to his bracha. And in that way, they would be makabel his bracha, but they would also, through their Amen, they would sort of vicariously be the mavarchim. So in such a case, again, this is the Turiyev, and he wants to suggest that that's what the Mishnah is coming to be Mechadish, that if this fellow is the Maftir guy, and he's a Kohen, and the other members of the community are all Kohenim, Halavai, I mean, where I daven, they, more often than not, they don't even have a Kohen, but here's a shul that's made up of exclusively of Kohenim.
Mm-hmm. Revitalize Anatot.
So he gets to be the Kohen that's Ol L'Duchen. The Rashash has another explanation. He says the following. The Gemara says in Brachos that the Shliach Tzibur himself, if he's a Kohen, is very problematic. You know, usually today what we see, I don't know if it's the same as, we'd have to ask Eric Sfaradim, but in Ashkenazi, what, usually the Shatz himself will be Mavarech, but it's not so poshut. There's a whole sugi about this in Maseh the Brachos. And according to one man, the Omar, if there are other Kohanim, then the Shliach Tzibur, if he's a Kohen, he will not be Duchen. And the only time they'll allow the Shliach Tzibur himself to Duchen if he's a Kohen is in Ein Shom Kohen Elohu. He's the only Kohen in the bunch. And not only that, he has to promise, you know, he has to, so to speak, commit himself that he'll be noseis kapo v'chozer litfilos, and he'll immediately go back to finish up the last bracha, I guess. So pirshu aposkim she'im yesham kohanim chutz mimenu, if there are other kohanim other than him, then even though he promises to move, we can rely on him that he'll continue the role as Shliach Tzibur. Nevertheless, we don't allow him to be known because we can do without him. So it's only a real fallback position. If absolutely necessary, he's the only Kohen that we have, then we allow him to be the Kohen, even though he's playing the same role as the Shliach Tzibur. But he has to, you know, he has to be relied upon that he'll go back and finish. Oh. Lefi zeh, ba Mishnah seinu lashmia. The Mishnah wants to tell you that if he's the maftir, then he could be over lifnei ateva. And ba Mishnah seinu lashmia sha'af shehu over lifnei ateva. So he's going to be the shliach tzibur. Mikomakom kevan shu maftir yachol liso es kapov. Right, and if he promises, he's relied upon that he'll continue. So the special privilege that we give to the maftir, according to that Mishnah, this is the Rashash, is that normally we would not allow him to duchen, despite the fact that he's a kohen, because he's playing the role as a shliach tzibur. Here, we're going to give him the benefit of both. He's going to get two prizes, so to speak. He'll get first prize in being the shliach tzibur. At the same time, he'll get a separate prize, and we award him with the ability to be the kohen ha'ole l'duchen, even if there are other kohenim. We really don't need him, but we're going to allow him that flexibility. Uvesvas emes tirates, he says, the afilu gadol shalonis males kono eno noses kapov. There's a halacha that if he's not mature, you know, he doesn't grow a beard yet, usually we don't allow him to duchen. And again, these are all halachas that sound a little strange to our ears, but back in the day, mikomoko maftir mishu rogil lahaftir noses kapov. So in other words, even if he's lo nismalis kono, we'll give him the honor of being no se kapov, we'll waive the requirement of nismalis kono. And why? Because he's the maftir. Because, again, we're giving a prize to the maftir, which we don't understand yet. Why? That's going to be two explanations in the Gemara. Why? Then he quotes the Nitzivni Valojin. He says the following, that bizmanam, again, these are all minhagim that we're not familiar with. He says, echad me'akonim ayimavarech u'motzias chaveri dechovaso. Wow. That if there were more than one kohenim, only one kohen would duchen, and the other kohen would say amen to his bracha. I don't know if he would stand there with his hands out. It's not clear to me. And then he says, the Mishnah says that the maftir will be that one, you know, singled out kohen who will make the brachos on behalf of the other Kohen. That's very similar to what we saw earlier, right, that if, in according to the Turi, even if the synagogue is made up completely, right, the community at that particular moment is made up exclusively of Kohenim, one Kohen will recite the bracha for the other nine Kohenim, and we're going to give that schus to the maftir. And here we're saying that even though the minig was that one Kohen would duchen, even if there were plenty of Yisraelim.
Go ahead.
One Kohen with Duchen and the other Kohenim would be Yotzi Yedei Chova, that's called Shomer Kohona.
Right.
The other Kohen. But in this case, we want to make sure that the Maftir is the one who's going to get that honor.
The other Kohenim would be on the Duchen or not?
That he doesn't tell you.
No, that's fine.
You know, I was really perplexed about that.
It can't be otherwise. It has to be not on the Duchen.
Well, not on the Duchen?
Because the Bechas Kohenim, the Gemara in Yom said the Bechas Kohenim goes only, it's only his, it's got to be...
The spread?
On the spread. So if they're back behind him or way on the side, it's not going to give the bracha. Bracha goes through walls, but not backwards.
But it's hard for me to believe that, again, we're not familiar with this meeting, that one Kohen is Mavarch, but it's hard for me to believe that the other Kohenim are just passively sitting in the audience. I mean, we want to get that bracha too. Shomer Kohen on the Maisa bracha, on the Kriya.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Again, I can't promise
No.
Asha,
no.
You all Shitas, then I'm Shitas. I don't know who's right. Because the Nitziv doesn't describe this minim. In fact, I'll tell you something else. There's a lot of Torah as to why each Kohen goes up to Duchen and we don't apply the principle of Shomer Kohen. So this Nitziv is very, very unfamiliar to me. I mean, again, the Nitziv himself says that was only the minhag then. So again, the Gemara is going to address the more fundamental question as to why we're giving all these kibudim to the maftir. You know what? I'm thinking out loud. If you gentlemen give me permission, I would skip the rest of the Mishnah for a moment, just because the curious mind would like to know what's the big deal about the maftir. So we're going to skip right to the Gemara.
Okay.
My timer. Why did they enact this takana that the maftir, he's the one who gets to be parsal shma, he's the one who gets to the shliach tzibur, he's going to be the chief kohen if he's a kohen. Rav Papa Amar, according to one man, the Amar, Mishum Kavod. They wanted to give him this Kavod because he deserves the Kavod. Why does he deserve the Kavod? So if you take a look at Rashi
yeah.
About six lines up from the bottom of the page, he says, Lahavil is table, we give him this Kavod. Hoil Umamtsi Atzmo, because he volunteered. Lidover she'eno kvodo. In other words, we're giving him a payback. You know, in modern Hebrew we call it a pitsui. We're going to compensate him. Why? Because he was the one, right? Who took the if you want to call it like, I'm afraid to use this word, but like the lowest of all kibudim. Maftir could be even a cut, and we're going to see later on. And it's not really part of the shiva kruim. His reading in the Novi. Even the Maftir itself, we remember the Gemara vacillated back and forth, but the final conclusion is the Maftir is not part of the Sheva Kruah. So in a sense, it was a little bit of a Prisas HaKovet on his part to volunteer to take the Haftorah. You know, today in our contemporary life, we would say it was a Prisas HaKovet because he doesn't know how to break his teeth on the Haftorah. You know what I'm saying? But he's embarrassed, you know, because he really doesn't know how to read the Haftorah. But I'm just being cynical. Let's assume he knows how to read the Haftorah, but nevertheless, amongst the, you know, in the matrix of kibudim, this is like the lowest of the low. So we're going to give him a compensation. That's Rav Papa. And tiknu lo zu akavod. So for someone...
So what's the kavod? What's the kavod? You'll say the bracha when all the latecomers come in, so they can say Shema.
Right. You'll be the representative of the tzibur for Kaddish, for Kedusha, for Baruch Hu, for Chazor Sashatz. All this we're going to give you. And if you're a Kohen, we're going to give you a special role as a Kohen.
I do. I
and
have
all because you were willing to lower your demand of respect and take it upon yourself.
Or work the hardest. You know, have to, as you say, break.
Okay, but I'm saying Rashi. Rashi is saying like
amongst Gabayim, the person who davens maftir usually rolls into. Into Musaf, but okay, say it.
Okay, then, so that's number one. That's as far as Rashi is concerned. Now, he quotes a Ran that the Ran says that there's another principle in the ethics, in Jewish ethics, that if someone is borech min hakavod, is hakavod borech achrov, meaning that since he was borech min hakavod, he was willing to take like the lowest of the low, he took the maftir, so we'll give him a kavod. It's very similar to Rashi, but now we have a totally radically different approach to our Mishnah, and that's Rabba Bar Shimi. I always wondered the name Shimi if it's a short form of Shimon. I don't know, Shimi, but it's quite a common name in Shas. He says, Mishum di Asilin Suye. This takana was made to avoid altercations and fights that could break out. Now, you and I know that we don't run after COVID, so we don't have these fights. But if you're familiar with synagogues and what goes on, there's a whole bunch of underlying, you know, friction about who should get the kibbutz. Uh-huh. So what happens here? There's going to be a fight. Why is there going to be a fight? So it's very interesting. The Gemara is going to explain in just a minute that in those days, the Shliach Tzibur, just like a professional chazan in our time, used to get paid for his job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone was vying for that job because I guess it was an extra parnasa. Like today, very often in many shuls, the Kori Batori gets paid, right? You lay in, so you get 50 shekel, $50 a Shabbos, or whatever the going rate is for laying, right? Yeah. So there was a kind of a fight that would break out. So Chazal looked for a way in which they could somehow avoid these fights. And they looked for someone or some method by which we could give out the kavod and nobody would fight for it, because it was already understood who would get that kavod of being a shliach tzibur in this case, because as I said before, the shliach tzibur would be paid for it. Now imagine you have two candidates for the following two positions. Let's say one candidate is to be a one job is to be a shliach tzibur. The other job is to be maftir benavi. We have two people who are vying. Each one wants to choose. He wants to prefer being the shliach tzibur because he's going to get paid for that. So what do? We make the following deal. We say that if he takes the maftir and he's not going to be paid for that, then he's going to get paid for being the shliach tzibur. So it's sort of like a trade-off. But the main thrust here is to avoid fights because people want to get that job of being a shliach tzibur. So they found a method by which logistically they could determine who would get that kavod and who would get paid for it. The Gemara says, "My beinayu, what's the nafkamina between Rapapa and Rabbi Bar Shimi? Ikabeinayu di ovid bechinam. Let's say in a place where they don't pay the shliach tzibur, he's not paid. He does it gratis. He doesn't expect any remuneration for his services. There's no chashash that'll come to fighting, and therefore, according to Rabbi Bar Shimi, we would not apply the principle of give the maftir the kavod. We don't have to sign it. You know, sign the kavod of being a shliach tzibur. Nobody's fighting over it. But if on the other hand we go with the approach of our papa, that since he this fellow who's the ragil b'maftir, the way Rashi says it, he's willing to sort of lower himself, so we want to give him a payback and give him the kavod, then that would apply irrelevant to whether or not the shliach tzibur is a paid position. So now the Gemara says, well, how are we going to understand our Mishnah according to any one of the two shittos? And now the Gemara quotes that part of the Mishnah which we were up to, which we didn't read. So let's just keep one finger on the Gemara and just move up a little bit in the Mishnah itself. And the Mishnah says the following: Katan Korei Batora. Meaning we allow, and this was a Gemara back on Chav Gimel, we allow a Katan to be the reader of the Torah. In fact, according to many poskim, he can even be one of the seven, and we calculated in the number seven. Many poskim say that that's only on Shabbos because we already have three gedolim who got the basic three aliyos, and the other four aliyos, the balance, that's already a tosefes, that's already a dinim kavod Shabbos. But as far as the basic mitzvah of kriyas haTorah, the way it was established, we already have the three. And then the Meiri goes as far as to say is that he's not going to recite the brachos. Why? Because to recite brachos, you need what's called a bar chiyuva. In other words, I can be motzi you because I share the same chiyuv as you, but in the case of a katan, I don't share that chiyuv, and therefore I can't make the brachos. But in any event, what the Mishnah establishes is that the katan can read the Torah, and other people will listen to his kriya, and they'll be yotzei. So in the footnotes here, there's a long discussion here. It starts with the Ran and the Iri and others. How could the Katan read the Torah on our behalf? Isn't that also Shomer Ka'one? And here I want to mention, my Rebbe Rav Salvech used to tell us a story that happened in his youth when Rav Moshe Salvechik was the Rav in the town. It was called Chaslavich, was the name of the town. So somebody came over to Rav Moshe And he asked him, he says, the Balkore told him, because they had some sort of a fight, that I have in mind not to be Yotzi. I'm excluding you. I'm reading it for the rest of the call, but not for you. Right. And he came up to Moshe and he said, what should I do? So Moshe said, don't pay any attention. He doesn't have to have you in mind. And even if he wants to exclude you, he just creates a, again, you have to know the Brisket terminology, he creates a Cheftza Shel Torah. And anyone who hears that Cheftza Shel Torah is Yotze. And Rav Moshe Soloveitchik pointed out that the halacha of Shomea Ka'one does not apply with regard to Kriyas HaTorah. It's not that the Kori is being Motzi you, the Kori is just generating an entity called Torah, mm-hmm. Torah B'tzibur, mm-hmm. and through his Kriya, through that entity of Cheftza Shel Torah, everyone plugs in, listens to the Torah, and fulfills his obligation. So why do I tell you this story? Because I think, Lefiani is Daiti, that Rav Moshe would have quoted our mission as a proof. And that's the Ron's question. The Ron says, how could a katan read the Torah when he's an Eina Mechuyev B'Dover? Right? And the halacha is that I can't be Motzi unless I'm a Mechuyev B'Dover. And I think, according to Rav Moshe, we may have an answer to that question, that although the katan is an Eina Mechuyev B'Dover, but nevertheless he can create a Cheftza Shel Torah, again, assuming he's mature enough, and therefore we could all be Yotze, but we don't have to apply the principle of Shomea Ka'ona.
Is it Megillah Shomea Ka'ona? I
didn't hear what Rav Moshe said about Megillah, but my guess would be that Megillah would be the same thing as Kriyas HaTorah, meaning it would be right. We had a whole Mishnah earlier about Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about whether a katan could read the Megillah. Let's say we assume that a katan can read the Megillah, if you hold like that. But if you hold that the katan cannot read the Megillah, then apparently Shomei Kodo works by Megillah. So what do we have in our Mishnah? The Mishnah says the following: Katan korei b'Torah, right? Umitargem. There's no reason why he can't translate the Torah for us. Aval eino paris shmavieno overlifteya. But when it comes to being motzi the tzibur, right? For example, if the shliach tzibur is reciting the chazor sashatz on behalf of the tzibur, or for example, he's being paris alashma. So he's reciting Baruch Hu and Kedusha and Kaddish and the first Baruch of Kriyas, all this on behalf of the Tzibur, then he has to be a Mechuyev B'Dover. In other words, here we're operating within the framework of Shomea Ka'one. There's a separate halacha in Kriyas HaTorah that the Katan could read the Torah. But Vienna no says Kapov. In other words, if he's a Kohen, and again, we wanted to give him a special, let's say a special kibud, let's say there were no other Kohenim around, but we're not going to allow him to be the exclusive kohen. If there are other kohenim, then the katan could go up in duchen, you know, b'toras chinuch. But it's not covered at tzibur if there's only one kohen and he's a katan. Imagine an 11-year-old is going to go up and there'll be no seis kapov. The Mishnah says that that's unacceptable. Okay. Now, there's one line in the Mishnah here that I inadvertently skipped. So let's go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah, if you remember, speaks about the Maftir Benavi. And we said before that even a katan could be Maftir Benavi. Even a katan could read the Torah itself, and certainly could be Maftir Benavi. Again, the Brachos is a whole other parsha that I said before in the name of the Meiri, that that they'll have to have a gadol read the Brachos. And the Mishnah says, "V'im ha'ya katan." If the maftir b'novi was a katan, I think I once saw that. It's not common, but it's acceptable. So the katan reads the haftorah, and the Mishnah says that he cannot be poreis alashma. He cannot be the shliach tzibur for chazor sashatz. But aviv o rabo ovrim al yado. You know, it's the kibud that in the original enactment that we gave them after the covenant of being paris al shema, being the shliach tzibur for chazos hashatz. What do we do in this case? Well, for some reason, in this case, the katan. Right, I'm sorry. Forget about the words. For some reason, I mean, in this case, the katan clearly could not get that kavod because, again, we need shomea kohen. He's not a bar chiyuva, but the kavod still exists. It's like inherent. And what does the katan do with that kavod? He has those special rights as a prize, and now he gives it to either his father or his Rebbe. Aviv o Rabo Ovrim al Yado. Now, there are a whole bunch of questions we could ask here. For example, One question we could ask is why it says Aviv first and Rabbo second. Secondly, why do we give the kavod to the father or to the Rav? I mean, they're not reading the Haftorah. And the third question we could ask is, what does this phrase Ovrim al Yado mean? Very strange. It should have said Ovrim lifnei ateva or Parsim al Shema. I don't know. Ovrim al Yado is a very strange phrase. But again, we have a lot of questions to ask, but I just wanted to plug back into the Ma'ay B'nai. So we had Rav Papa and Rav Sim and Rabbi Bar Shimi. They argue as to why the Rabbana made this takana that the Maftir B'Navi should be given all the other kibudim. Is it because of kavod, or is it in order to avoid altercations? Tanan, now the Mishnah quotes, now the Gemara quotes our Mishnah, Vim Hoya Katan. If the Maftir Benovi was a katan, Aviv O Rabo Ovrim Al Yado. So Gemara says the following. E Amrit Mishum Nitsuye. If this whole enactment to give this prize, these rights, these rewards, was because we want to avoid fighting, katan bar nitsuyehu, is the katan, so you know, usually this is more typical of a more mature person. You know, why did you slight me and you didn't give me the covenant of being of getting the first dibs? So where's the chashir of a fight, of a battle, in the case of a katan who's the maftir? Elamai, so the Gemara says, what are you implying, mishum kavod? There I do understand it. Katan bar kavod hu is a katan, like a mature adult who gets very sensitive if you don't give him the kavod. So what is this all about when we say that the aviv o rabo ovrim al yado, which means that the basic possession, so to speak, or rights to this prize, this kavod, still is inherent in the katan? Why would they make such takana on behalf of a katan? I mean, he doesn't demand his kavod, and certainly he's not vying to get this position and be paid. He's not in the, you know, in the competition, in the frail, in the Elamai, so the Gemara says, yeah. Oh. So Ella says the Gemara, if it's according to Rav Papa. So what was your question? That a katan is not a bar kavod, right? We don't have to give a kavod to the katan. Ella says the Gemara, Ika kvod aviv ukvod rabo. Now it's part of this enterprise of kavod extends, at least in the case of a katan, to his father or to his rebbe. Again, we don't understand exactly why, but since we gave out this reward to the katan, and he really deserves the reward, except he cannot receive the reward, so now his father goes up to receive the reward in his place. Or if not his father, his Rebbe. So the Gemara now says, Hakanami here on Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis, here too, Ika Nitsuye Aviv Nitsuye Rabo. Since we're assuming that this kavod, this prize, is going to be given not only to the Maftir Benavi himself, in the case of a katan, it's going to expand to include Aviv or Rabo, so they're going to fight it out as well. There's going to be a battle. So therefore, we want to make sure that they will be given this cover. Now, as far as...
the point was to give... It was a second-hand way of giving cover to the Rebbe or to the father,
right,
by giving it to the kid who'll get it. Maybe that was one way to try to avoid
machlokas.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, give it to the kid.
Right. It is a kavod to a parent when a kid gets a right, or something like that.
Right. So he quotes here the Ran, and the Ran says the following. He says, Ovrim, the word Ovrim here in our Mishnah, when it says Oviv O Rabo Ovrim Al Yodo, corresponds to the phrase earlier in the Mishnah, Over Lifnei Ateva. Okay, now this is a little bit strange, because if we're saying that it means Over Lifnei Ateva, why would the Mishnah emphasize that as opposed to Paris HaLashma? Somehow Paris HaLashma got lost here. The Sifsei Chachamim says that the word Ovrim refers to responsibility. That's the word Ovrim means in this context. Why? So he says that the ben, or let's say, for example, vis-a-vis his Rebbe, he's a Talmud, he says the following: if the ben was over avera, then who takes responsibility for the avera of a katan? The katan himself is not going to be held responsible for his avera. He's a delinquent child, maybe, but he's still a minor. He's not an adult. And again, Reb Chaim had a lot of Torah about whether a maisa katan and a avera of a katan is a maisa avera. It's not a maisa avera. Reb Kivegi understood that the katan doesn't have a maisa avera, but Reb Chaim understood the katan is capable of a maisa avera, just he's potter from onshin. So in this case, since we cannot penalize the katan, so we look for the source of the avera. And what's the source of it? Nitla dover be aviv o rabo, meaning they may have been somewhat less than perfect in their education. Nimtza shehem ovrim avera al yodo. Wow, this is not the simple pshat in our Mishnah. When it says aviv o rabo ovrim al yodo, means that, so to speak, vicariously through the avera of the cotton, they're considered as if they violated avera because they're responsible. Lachain, once we impose that heavy responsibility, that in event that the katan would sin, the father or the Talmud or the Rebbe would bear responsibility, so we want to give them again a compensation for that. If af betova hem zochin al yado. So that means that we're going to give the father this kavod because he took upon himself the responsibility. You know, it's like when a father brings his son to bar mitzvah, he says, "Baruch Shem Tarani Me'otzer Shazeh." You know, finally, I can shift the responsibility over to the son himself. Okay, let's go on in the Mishnah. There's another section, two more sections of the Mishnah. So we're back on Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. Pocheach. Rashi identifies a pocheach as someone whose knees are exposed. Do you see that? Kol shekrov nirim. Now, in our language, I guess we'd say he's wearing shorts. Yeah? And his knees are exposed. Now, Rashi tries to prove that the word pocheach in Lashon Kodesh, or at least in Aramaic, I don't know, means his knees are exposed. And he quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya with the targum on that pasuk. The pasuk says, Arom v'yachef. And the targum says that the word Arom is artiloi, he's naked. And then the word yachef, which literally would mean he's barefoot, is pocheach, or pachach. So Rashi shows you that the word pachach, I'm not 100% sure if that's in Aramaic or in Lashon Kodesh, but that's the translation of yachef. But Rashi goes ahead and says that we should identify that as someone whose knees are exposed. And that's going to be a problem for the tzibur, to send up a shliach tzibur in that it's not covered at tzibur for him. Now if you take a look at Tosfos, Tosfos writes v'lesa in the Dibur HaMaaseh Pocheach at the end of the second line. He says v'lesa. Rashi is not correct. Why? De pachi, that word pachi in the Targum, hu targum shel orum. No, that's not going back on the word yachev, but rather the word orum. V'chein pirush rav alfis, de pachi zeu oso shel lovush begodim kruim. So I have a feeling that some parts
ripped of this, jeans.
Yeah, right. But I think it's even worse than jeans. I think it means that there are certain parts of his body, of his physical body, that are exposed. That's what I'm guessing, because Tosfos quotes the Rif to support his understanding that the word pocheach means orum. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's some connection there between bgadav kruim and an orum. So now the question is, what do we do with this fellow? You know, he's in shul. He obviously shares obligations vis-a-vis tefillah. But on the other hand, we don't want him to be the shliach tzibur. It's not covered for the tzibur for him to go up with his knees exposed or other parts of his body exposed. Mm-hmm. So the Mishnah makes the following distinction. What are we going to allow him to do? What are we not allowing him to do? And the answer is the following. Pores eshma. We're going to allow him to be Poris al Hashma. The reason for that is because the Poris al Hashma does not stand in front of the Tzibur. We have a phrase called Yored Lufnei HaTeva. But rather, in the case of Kporis al Shema, no one has to go down in front of the Teva. Ela omeid bimkomo uporis. Any one of the 10 people who are there participating in this Poris al Shema, wherever he's sitting, wherever he's standing, he could be Poris al Shema. And therefore, ein lochush lekovet atzibur. He's not a full-fledged representative of the tzibur. Again, what the lumdus here is, I do not know. But for some reason, in the case of Poris al Shema, it's more of like a joint effort, you know, communal effort. There's not one individual who's singled out to be the Yored Lifnei Ateva. Again, in those days, you know, the Duchen, or whatever you want to call it, the Shulchan where the Shliach Tzibur would stand was lowered down. You'll see it in some Sephardic communities today. So that's called Yored Lifnei Ateva. Umetargim. Now, in terms of Metargim, again, I think what's happening here is that he's not really representing the Tzibur. The Metargim is only there to transmit the meaning of the Torah. So there's no such entity as Kovarat Tzibur that might be ill affected here by the fact that this Poncheach, whose knees are exposed, is being Metargim the Torah. So whenever there's a Shliach of the Tzibur, then we have an issue of Kovarat Tzibur. But if he's not really represented. For example, I don't even know if the Metargim had a special place where he stood. It could be that he had a loud voice and wherever he... Again, Lavdavka, whatever you want to say where the Metargim stood, but the point is that he's not a Shliach of the Tzibur. Oh, but now we get to two other dimensions, and maybe even three, where this individual is a Shliach HaTzibur. And what is that? Number one, Aval Einu Kori BaTorah. Again, even though we said in the name of Moshe Salvechik that Kriyas Torah is just to create an entity of Torah, but that entity of Torah is only meaningful insofar as he is representing the entire Tzibur. Again, he doesn't have to have Kavanah to be Motzi, every single member of the Tzibur, as a Shomer Kaona, but nevertheless he has to create an entity of Torah on behalf of the Tzibur. And that he can't do because it's not Kavanah Torah if his knees are exposed. Vieno over Lifnei Ateva, certainly he can't be the Shliach Tzibur for Chazoras HaShatz when he's a Pocheach. Vieno knows he has Kapov, and he cannot go up to Duchen. And here the assumption is that even if there are many Kohenim with Duchenin, he's not the only Kohen available, but nevertheless he can't be Mitztarev, because when he goes up, he's also representing the Tzibur, and it's a Gnai, it's an insult to the Tzibur for someone in that undressed, unkempt state to represent the Tzibur. Now we get to the last part of the Mishnah. Suma. Now, as we said before, in Poris Hashma, the first bracha, which is called Yotza Ma'oros, where we thank Hashem for the light of the luminaries, right? That's going to be the Poris Hashma. But he's a Suma. So the question is he obligated to the mitzvah of Birchas Kriyat Shema, in this case, the first bracha of Yotza Ma'oros? So there's a machlokas here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda. If he's a person who was born with sight, Baruch Hashem, he became blind, but he's certainly someone who knows what light means, you know, he's experienced light, Then everybody agrees that he can make the bracha Borei Ma'oros. There's going to be a machlokas here between Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda and someone who was born blind, Nebuch. So let's go through the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Suma Poreis Es Hashma. He can be Mavarach Yotza Ma'oros, even though he doesn't really benefit from the light, he doesn't see the light, but nevertheless, he thanks Hashem, he knows what light is all about, and the Gemara is going to tell a whole story here as a mashal to see how he benefits from the light, because others can see him. We'll get to that just in a few minutes. And then the Mishnah says, Umetargim. Now the Chiddush here, the Mishnah is that we normally have halacha of Dvarim Shebichsav Yatar Hashem Lomram Balpeh, and Dvarim Shebalpeh of Torah Shomam Lubichsav. So I think what the Gemara is assuming here, I mean the Mishnah, is that Targum is called Torah Shebalpeh. And if it's Torah Shebalpeh, you don't have to read it from a text. Now again, you and I might say it's best to read it from a text, because otherwise you might make mistakes. But if this Suma is an expert, you know, let's say for example, for the last 50 years, he's being mitargim, he knows the targum literally backwards and forwards, then we don't have a problem that he'll make a mistake. And we don't have a problem of Dvarim Shebichsav, Iyat HaRasham Lom Baal Peh, because it has the status of Dvarim Shebaal Peh. So the Summa could read it by heart. Today we have Braille, so maybe there's even less of a problem. So that's as far as Paris Hashma Mitargim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he has one histaygut, you know, and he says Kol Shelo Ra Maoros Miyomav Eino Pores Al Shma. If he never saw light, he was born blind. Then he really has no conception of what the Maoros are. So we'll just very quickly, I know we're running out of time, but just to chaperite another few lines. Boy mine, okay, so that's boy mine. Oh, shucks, I wanted to talk to you a little about Suma. Mm-hmm. Alright, so you know what, this won't be Bifnim, this is going to be Baal Peh. I mean, this is not part of the Shir itself, but the Gemara is going to ask, according to the Chachamim, how could a person who never saw lights in his life thank Hashem for the Hanoah, for the benefit from the light? So the Gemara tells a story here. Omar Rav Yossi, Kol Yomai Yitz Ta'isi Mitztar Al Mikra Zen, the Tochacha says about someone who's blind, but a Fela. No, there's no light around. So Rav Yossi says that all my days, I never understood this pasuk. I mean, if he's an Iver, he's blind, and that's what the pasuk says, why does the pasuk have to add, it's in the Tochacha, that it's by Fela? I was once walking, it was pitch black, there was no light. And I saw a blind person. And the strange thing, the paradox was, the blind person is holding on to a torch. I said to him, my son, Avuka zu lamalacha. I mean, you're blind, so what do you gain by the avuka? Amrali, the Suma said to me, Kol zman sheyishli avuka biyadi, as long as I'm holding this torch, b'nei adam roim osi, other people can see me. And this is in the afil. U'matzilin osi min apchasim, u'min akotzim, min abarkonim. They'll be able to save me from ditches, from thistles, from thorns, that I shouldn't trip into them. So Rav Yossi says, from this I understood what the pasuk, how bad the tocha is. It's going to be iver ba'afela. The klal is so bad, it's going to be, if it's an iver with light, because the iver is holding on to a torch, that's not a fela. So at least the iver will be protected by others. But the klal is going to be so bad that Nebuch, we won't even have a torch, so we'll all be blind, and there won't be a torch. So we see from this whole story, the Gemara says that a person, even though he's a suma, he gets benefit from light, and therefore the Rabbanan say that he can make a bracha on the light. Okay, so we'll fill this in tomorrow. Sure. I just wanted to get that in under the wire, so to speak.
Okay.
So let me make a note of where we got up to, because I'm liable to forget. Yeah.
Did you hear from John?
I just got an email from John that he has on Friday that he has fever. I was hoping that by today he would feel better, so I haven't heard from him since.